Solar Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Moeller is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Moeller, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Moeller.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Moeller Program. Here's the question. You're a parent. Your child, someone says your child is in danger. Someone suggests that something is wrong with your parenting. Something suggests that your child is in a dangerous situation and suggests that the government should come and remove your child. What should be the threshold for that to take place? Let's just consider what's going on right now in Texas. The Texas Supreme Court has sustained an appellate court decision that suggests that the state of Texas was wrong in raiding the Yearning for Zion Ranch of the fundamentalist Latter-day Saints and removing 400 children and separating them from their mothers, spreading them, we now know, across a geographic area of several hundred miles. According to the latest reports just coming in, the Associated Press just minutes ago is reporting that Texas child welfare authorities are going to start returning children who were seized from the polygamous sect beginning Monday. Now, the first thing that happened in the news coming out of the Yearning for Zion Ranch raid was a sense of relief that somehow these children were going to be all right. Then there was the sense of real anxiety about the state swooping in and taking 400 children from parents. You see, I think the first wave of response came from the fact that when Americans heard polygamist, they thought, these people are strange enough, the state probably has a right to go in and get those kids. But the second wave of response was, if the state of Texas can swoop in and take those kids, maybe they can sweep in and take mine. Now, I think most of us would understand that there comes a point in which parents forfeit their parental rights, or at least the presumption of those parental rights, for at least some period of time until someone can determine if children are genuinely in danger. But the precedent set by that Texas act must be what was on the minds of the Texas Supreme Court when it said that the state of Texas had gone too far. Because as it turns out, the state had brought no compelling evidence that those children, the 400 children removed, were actually in any danger whatsoever. It was on the presumption of what was now understood to be a false report. And by the way, it may turn out that an investigation will reveal that there are all kinds of awful things going on. We know already it is a fundamentalist polygamous sect. We know already that they are breaking the law. We know already that there is a lot going on there in terms of older men taking younger brides. We know that. But we don't know what explains why the state of Texas decided to raid the entire ranch and take all the children. Now, let me tell you why I think this is such a live issue for us. It is because right now, you think about the words being used in the media. You hear such things as this group described as a group of fundamentalist Mormons. Well, what if it were changed to fundamentalist Christians? What if the issue that is raised is not polygamy, but a refusal, for instance, to send children to the public schools? Or a refusal to allow children to participate in sex education programs? Or any number of things that could be used by someone in the society to suggest those parents are not raising those children right. Those children are in some kind of danger. The children's rights movement itself is something that gained a lot of momentum in the 70s and in the 80s in law schools. And I guarantee you that there are people right now who would wish that parents did not have the presumption of having the right to determine the upbringing of their children. We're going to be talking about this today. It is all over the country, of course, and there is interest in this beyond the United States. If you are in Texas, this is an issue of almost 24/7 news because this is something happening in your state. USA Today, headline today, ruling upheld in polygamous case. The parents of more than 400 children seized from a polygamous sex ranch are waiting for a final court order to let them take their children home. Removal of the children was not warranted. The Texas Supreme Court ruled in a 6-3 decision affirming an appellate court. It said that the children were not in any immediate danger, or at least the state had failed to provide sufficient evidence that the children were in any immediate danger of child sexual abuse in order to take all these children away. The Texas Department of Family and Protective Services, and I'm quoting here from the court's decision, failed to meet its burden of proof. The phone call to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. This is an issue of tremendous importance because when you're talking about parental rights, you're talking about something that is not only a concern in Texas for the parents of these children involved in a polygamous sect, but rather it is a concern of every parent and could well be a concern of yours if we do not discuss this. And if we don't have a common understanding in this culture pretty quickly of the fact that parents really do deserve and inherently do have the right to determine the upbringing of their children. We'll get to that issue in just a moment. The phone call can be yours. Just call us at 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. There's a lot of news coming out of New York State in particular because Governor David A. Patterson has set forth an executive order indicating that all state authorities in the state of New York must recognize same-sex marriages conducted elsewhere. You begin to notice with this announcement, once again, how the momentum toward same-sex marriage is growing in this country. Let's just set the issue over the last couple of weeks. You've had the California Supreme Court rule that that state must now expand marriage to same-sex couples, and we now have word coming from the government of the state of California that it will not appeal that ruling. The administration of Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has decided it will comply with the ruling. And not only that, it suggests that same-sex marriage licenses, or better put, marriage licenses for same-sex couples, will be ready for public use and administration by June 17th of this year. Now, Governor Patterson, and you'll remember that he was Lieutenant Governor David Patterson until he rose to the office of governor upon the resignation of his predecessor, Governor Elliot Spitzer. He has now set forth this executive order. The New York Times and other news reports are indicating that Governor Patterson had come with this agenda from the very beginning. As a matter of fact, one of the things said about him when he was taking the oath of office as the governor of New York is that he would be the most gay-friendly governor in New York history. Now, the New York Times reports that at least part of this had to do with the fact that when his parents were out of town, he and his little brother would stay in Harlem with family friends they called Uncle Stanley and Uncle Ronald, a homosexual male couple. The governor said in an interview on Thursday, quote, "Apparently my parents never thought we were in any danger. I was raised in a culture that understood the different ways that people conduct their lives, and I feel very proud of it." On Thursday, the governor appealed to the people of the state to recognize what he called the basic common sense of allowing gay men and lesbians married elsewhere to gain the same rights here, that is in New York, as heterosexual couples. He went on and said, "People who live together for a long time would like to be married. As far as I'm concerned, I think it's beautiful." And thus the governor of New York speaks. He said, "I think it's fine, regardless of the tenets of religion or the beliefs of some. It's something that the government should allow for people. This may be misunderstood in this generation. It's maybe misunderstood in this generation." Well, it'll be fascinating to see what happens in New York, but there are already calls for legislation to undo the governor's executive order. The prospect of that is politically unknown. It'll be very interesting to see in coming days. And, of course, we also have the political dynamic in California, where there is now an initiative that will be on the ballot in November, a proposed constitutional amendment that would reverse the ruling made by the California Supreme Court. There is a lot going on here, and a part of what's going on is the concern on the part of many, in particular those who are concerned with religious liberty, that if same-sex marriage becomes a reality, as it appears momentum is building for it to do, that there will be a real curtailing of religious liberty. What will happen to those who refuse to recognize same-sex marriage? What will happen to churches, to institutions that refuse to recognize what is now being demanded, and that is that homosexuality, homosexual relations, homosexual behaviors be considered as absolutely normal? We'll be watching that with you, and especially next week, I'm hoping we can have a conversation about that because those issues are now coming to the fore and are doing so in a way that simply demands our attention. There's a lot going on in the news in terms of things that are gaining controversy, of course, recently having to do with the presidential election and especially attention to the Democratic nomination race. There's been increased attention to statements that have been made by, for instance, the Reverend Jeremiah Wright and now others at the church in Chicago, the Trinity United Church of Christ. The whole point of this also having to do with John Hagee and on the Republican side, John McCain, is the fact that suddenly preachers have become big news and fodder for the 24/7 cable news networks. The interesting thing for me to note in this is how little theology is actually a part of this discussion. I mean, for instance, when you have the discussion about Israel and John Hagee and Senator John McCain, it's all about politics and public perception. No one actually deals with the theological issues at stake. Here would be my plea to the national media. If you're going to talk about something that is of theological significance, have someone to talk about it that understands something about theology. That might be a start. Back to talk about the big question for today, and that is, when does the state have the right, and when should the expectation be that the state would act to remove children from parents for claim of danger? The phone number is 877-893-8255. This is the Albert Mueller Program, and we'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
You know, in a fallen world, we are presented with any number of moral dilemmas, and sometimes they even take on matters of legal consequence, and certainly our minds are attentive to what's going on in Texas. Right after the raid on the Yearning for Zion Ranch on this program, we discussed more or less the same question, but in a different context. I have noted that we are going through different waves of thinking as a society on this question. Even in Texas, it's very, very clear. The first wave of response to the news about the raid on the Yearning for Zion Ranch was, it's about time. Here's this polygamist group. There are reports of young girls who are being married to older men. The very word polygamy, rightfully, not wrongfully, rightfully sets off all kinds of warning bells. These are people whose very existence is a splinter movement off of the Mormon Church. They, by their very existence and practices, defy the laws of the land. And so the first wave of response, I think, of most Americans was these people are strange. When their women and wives show up on television, they look strange. They must raise their children in a strange way. And thus, the state had the right to come in and take those children. And yet, there were very quickly those who said, well, all right, but what basis did the state actually have for taking this action? What was the evidence that they brought forward? What was the claim that the state was making? And what happens now? What happens to these children now? Do they eventually get returned to their parents? Or what was the emergency that was going on here? That is the question that was being asked by many people. That was the question that was raised by the Texas Appeals Court. That was the question that was sustained by the Texas Supreme Court. Came back and said there was no emergency. The state of Texas brought forth nothing that was that kind of emergency to sustain and justify taking those children from their parents. I want to ask you today, this is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. I think we need to set the stage by saying that almost all of us would certainly agree that at some point, the state, meaning the government, has the right to intervene. The question is, at what point? And how do we think about this? And how do we make the case for the fact that parents really do have the right to raise their children the way they best see fit? Because I'm warning you right now that there are those who would use the very same argument used against the fundamentalist Latter-day Saints against a lot of evangelical and conservative Christians, having to do with the way you raise your children, whether it's the decision you make about education, whether it's the decision you make about medical care and psychological care, whether it's the decision you make about educational options, whether it's the decision you make about the discipline of your children, or if you take the new atheists at their word, the fact that you would inflict your religion, or at least the knowledge and exposure to your religion, that's the way they put it, on your children. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to El Paso, Texas. Ted's on the line, listening on XM-170. Go ahead, Ted.
Yes, I'm a military chaplain here in El Paso, and I just wanted to comment on your main topic that I have watched this up close and personal where the state came in and took a child away. I got very involved in the case. And I can tell you that any time the state arrogates to itself the right to come in and take people's children away, we all ought to be extremely concerned. The problem is it puts the right into the hands of an OCS worker who, in my case, was a 23-year-old girl with a brain full of mush. And what I witnessed basically was a legal kidnapping, and it's one of the most horrible things I ever saw, and it was to a young Christian family.
Now, Ted, I want to come back and ask you a hard question here. You're in a position to observe a great deal. I'm assuming that you would think that there is some point where some cause of concern would be raised that you would think the state could be justified to take a child for at least some period of time. Would you?
Absolutely. But I have, you know, like I said, I saw this up close and personal, and I met the people from OCS. And I can tell you, in my opinion, just from what I saw, these people were so zealous to take people's kids away. I couldn't believe it. It was horrifying.
Yeah, and I appreciate your call, Ted. And let me tell you that I have heard from many others in just the last couple of years who have seen similar things in states like Oregon, New York, Florida, where the state authorities have stepped in when the claim that has been made about the supposed problem is not, for instance, physical abuse, although sometimes there are those who would use just plain ordinary spanking as a justification for some claim of child abuse. But even decisions that were made about educational options and other things, or where you had, just a clear presumption that parents, in doing something out of the ordinary, were doing something that wasn't in the child's interest, and the state, I like the word Ted used, arrogated to itself the decision to decide what was in the child's best interest. This is tough stuff. It really is. And it's the kind of question that should require Christian parents to think. And even as a lot of people right now are focused on the weekend and what you're planning to do and summer plans and all the rest, just realize that when you're looking at something on the scale of what happened in Texas, that's what we're talking about, this kind of thing happens every day on a smaller scale. But on the scale of taking 468 children from their parents in one raid, that gets the nation's attention. I think the fact that it got the nation's attention is a good thing. I think, by the way, that the ruling made by the Texas Supreme Court is also a very good thing, for which we better be thankful. It did not say that the state of Texas could never make a case that these children were in danger. It said that the state of Texas had not made that case and had violated the due process and thus the rights of these parents. Appreciate the call from Ted in El Paso. Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky, where Bethany's on the line listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Bethany.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a nurse in a pediatric emergency department, and I think one whole different aspect, I don't have a good answer to kind of what you're talking about, but I think a whole other aspect is the idea of diversity. We see a lot of families that come into our hospital that have different beliefs because of their cultural diversity, and where do you draw the line of what is considered a danger to the child and what is considered within their right as a parent to make decisions about their child's health care? And that's another really big issue that kind of ties into that I think, you know, is coming to the forefront as well.
That's a very, very interesting thing, Bethany, and I imagine that you're in a position professionally where there are certain mandated responses and reporting that you have to do.
Yeah, that is correct. Obviously, if there's any specific signs of abuse, that has to be reported, but I think, again, you know, some cultures do things that they consider alternative types of medicine that we, as, you know, Westerners would say, no, that's, you know, that's totally not within the scope of good practice for your child. But, you know, where do you draw the line? Sometimes it can definitely get blurred.
I got to tell you a very interesting anecdote about that, by the way. I just read this in the last month. It had to do with a family on vacation, and I won't mention the country, but it was not the country of their residence. The country of their residence bans corporal punishment. And the father was traveling along with his family, and the 12-year-old son just really acted up. And the father just looked at the son and said, "We are not in," and he mentioned their home country, "anymore." And the boy got a taste of what he had never experienced at home. Now, you start looking at that, and you realize, just as Bethany is suggesting, that what's plausible in one place may not be plausible in another. What's legal in one place may not be legal in another. And across this country, you've got 50 different organizations of Child Protective Services or whatever it's called in your state. And you've got a lot of people with agendas, some with the agenda that they really care about the children, some with ideological agendas in which they think what is best for your children is what they would dictate. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The presenting issue is the fact that the Texas Supreme Court has ruled that the 468 children taken away from their parents, in particular their mothers, in the raid on the Yearning for Zion Ranch in Texas are to be returned. The ruling of the Texas High Court, sustaining a lower court, was that the state of Texas, through its department concerned with child welfare, had failed to produce the evidence and cause that the children were in any immediate danger of abuse, including sexual abuse. It doesn't say the state could never make that case and could never produce that evidence. It simply said that it had not. We're talking about this because of the scale. That's why it's headline news across the world, when you're talking about 468 children being taken away from parents. But that really means that we as Christians had better be on our feet making the argument, intellectually speaking, on our feet, making the argument as to why parents should be understood to possess the right to determine the upbringing of their own children. I want to work with you in helping to make that case. The background to the necessity of making this case is that the rise of the state, that is, of the government, and its intrusion into many arenas of life over the last 200 years has prompted the problem. If you were to go back just even decades, much less just a century or two in time, this would not be a question. It would just be presumed that a man was lord of his castle and the father was lord of his home, and that no one had a right to invade the domestic tranquility of that home. That doesn't mean that the father could not be arrested for violence. It doesn't mean that people weren't concerned when children weren't fed. It meant that the society used sanctions and influences other than the enforcement power of the state to intervene in these cases. Now, when you start looking at this, you realize that something has very, very fundamentally changed. When you have a police authority in Texas going in and making this kind of move, 468 children removed. You have people who are making the case that the family has been stripped of its functions. You start to think of that over the last, say, 200 years. The family used to be the church in terms of where children were first exposed to the faith. The family was the school, in many cases the only school where children learned. The family was the factory where, whether it was a farm growing produce or whether it was a blacksmith shop, you know, shoeing horses, industry was actually a matter of the family and the family's own domestic life as well. Now you have the rise of the government. You have the rise of an entire galaxy of experts, psychologists, pediatricians, those who are involved in child welfare, social workers, and all the rest, all offering what is received by the community as expert advice. And when you look at making the case for parental rights, you realize that that's what's in the background now, the presumption that the state must have some kind of oversight over the entire society at every level and dimension. It is the fact that the domestic sphere of the family has been stripped of its functions, and now the family has to speak up for its own central role because it's no longer universally recognized to be so. And it means that parents had better be vigilant to make very clear that we have the responsibility to raise our children. You know, the obvious question when you're making the case for parental rights is, who else would do it? You know, one of the interesting experiments of the 20th century were the Israeli kibbutzim, the kibbutzes, as many would describe them, these communal experiments in raising children. This goes all the way back to Plato, the Greek philosopher who suggested that children should be taken away from their mothers at early ages and raised together by the state. Sparta did this with boys, the ancient city of Sparta, taking them away from their mothers and fathers and raising them to be soldiers because it had a state interest in doing that. Our own understanding is very, very different, that parents have the right to raise their children because parents will do it to a degree of faithfulness and effectiveness that will far exceed what anyone else could do. But you know, for Christians, it's not merely a pragmatic argument, is it? It's a biblical argument having to do with God has established the family and an order within the society and the family, and has assigned to parents very specific responsibilities that cannot be delegated to anyone else. which is a reminder, dear Christian parent, that if we fail in those responsibilities, we actually create the opening for the state to claim that it or its agents must fulfill those responsibilities. To join the conversation, give me a call at 877-893-8255. We've got calls coming in from across the country, and you could be next. I want to know what you, as Christian parents, think about this. How would you make the case? And what are your concerns when you think about this case in Texas about what it means to be a Christian parent who could conceivably face some of the same questions? The number is 877-893-TALK. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We're talking about what's going on in Texas as the presenting case, the Texas Supreme Court ruling that 468 children from the fundamentalist group there, the Fundamentalist Latter-day Saints, must be returned after they were taken away from their mothers, from their parents, in the raid that was made on the Yearning for Zion Ranch just several weeks ago. I see it as a victory for parental rights, even as, I want to concede at the very beginning, I think there are clearly some cases in which the state has to take action. The problem is, it looks like the barrier of evidence, or say the burden of evidence that is required for that, is getting lower and lower and lower, because the state is getting more and more active. That's what happened. State Supreme Court just slapped down the Texas authorities for doing this, saying they had not made the case. And it just makes you wonder, on a smaller scale, how much of this is going on that we don't even know about. We're making the case for parental rights. We're also talking on this program today about what we should be concerned about and what kind of issues we should be watching for when it comes to encroachments on parental rights in our own day and perhaps even for our own families. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. In Mobile, Alabama, Alex is listening on XM170. Go ahead, Alex.
Good afternoon, Dr. Mueller. I've been listening with great interest, and you know what one individual may consider corporal punishment, another individual may consider child abuse. At that point, you say, well, I suppose in a worldly sense, both points of view are valid. So you then ask the question, what is your yardstick? What is your basis for determining what is good and what is not good? And I think at that point, the only sensible yardstick to use or basis for any determination of good or bad is then the Bible. So I think that everything has to ultimately point back to the Bible for determining what is good, what is not good, and where parental rights rest. Do they rest with the state or the government, or do they rest with the parents?
Yes. Alex, I appreciate so much your call. You know, I'm thinking right now as I listen to you speak that there are parents in California who could face something like this very quickly, where you have at least recurringly there, it seems, some proposed legislation to outlaw spanking. You know, first of all, you raise the question, how do you know the difference between corporal punishment and abusive behavior? And I think the easiest answer to that is pain without harm. The distinction, I mean, certainly corporal punishment is intended to inflict pain, but not harm. There's a difference between, inflicting pain to the backside and doing some kind of, bodily damage to the flesh or internal organs. And clearly, in some of those cases, we do recognize that abuse is a horrible thing that does happen. And the state needs to step in where that kind of physical abuse is taking place. Alex then goes on and says we need a common way to understand the difference between rightful corporal punishment and abuse, and suggest the scripture. And, you know, I think one of the most important clarifications we get in scripture is that corporal punishment is a parental responsibility. In the Proverbs, it doesn't say, parents, this is something you may use if it is convenient to you and you're the kind that thinks it works. It says, if you do not do this, you endanger your children's souls. It goes on and says that the one who spares the rod spoils the child, you know, well, that is not in the scripture. That's an anecdote. But the logic is there suggesting that if a parent does not discipline the child, he endangers the child's soul. That is written throughout the book of Proverbs. And not only that, Proverbs is very, very specific to say that pain is the issue. It goes on and says, if you use the rod on him, he will not, if you strike him, he will not die. In other words, you should be concerned to cause pain, but not harm. Now, Alex was concerned that that leaves the issue open to some subjectivity. And I guess there's no perfect way to get around that. But the issue here should be that the burden of proof should be against the state making any kind of incursion, even any kind of inquiry, unless there is some clear and present evidence of a clear and present danger to the child. But you need to realize that we're not in an ideologically neutral situation. We're in a situation that in many cases, in more and more cases, is openly hostile to the convictions of Christian parents. The influence of other ideologies is very, very pervasive, especially on the part of those who, unfortunately, in many cases, are making the decisions as to whether the state can or should intervene. There's still time for you to call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I think another issue we really need to think about here has to do with parents making decisions about a child's educational options, about a child's exposure to certain things. You know, there are all kinds of things going on out there having to do with everything from parents who don't want to have their kids vaccinated to parents that don't want their children to have certain kinds of exposure to chemicals, to parents who don't want their children to receive certain kind of medical treatments. Issue by issue, these things crop up. There are medical committees and major medical centers and hospitals that have to make decisions about how and when authorities should intervene in these situations. But, you know, more and more, I think the defensive posture is not on the part of the state, but on the part of the parent. That's what concerns me. More and more, it's parents who are going to be having to make the case that they do possess the right to raise their children, rather than the state having to make the case that it has to meet an extraordinary and sensible burden of proof and evidence before it actually claims to act on behalf of children. Now, again, we're talking about the Yearning for Zion Ranch and the raid made there because it is a sensational story. You're talking about the background issue of polygamy. That's sensational. You're talking about the scale, 468 children removed from parents. That's sensational. But I am absolutely confident that if you tallied up all the actions taken in the 50 respective states in any given week, it would add up to more than 468. But because they are individual cases that are off the screen and not debated on the 24/7 news channels, most of us simply don't know about them. That's one of the reasons I appreciate the call from Ted in El Paso, speaking as one who's observed these things, saying, you know, you can speak about them. He could speak about them in terms of personal experience. I, too, have been involved in cases and certainly knowledgeable of cases where this kind of thing has happened. In this situation, Christian parents, ignorance is not bliss. We must be always vigilant to think through these issues and to understand that our parental responsibility is not something that was given to us by the state. It's not something granted to us by the government, but rather by the Creator. The ultimate answer we give for raising our children will not be to the child welfare authorities, nor even to the Supreme Court of our state. It will be to the Creator, to whom we will give that answer, in particular for the stewardship of our parenting. Christian parents have a lot of challenges these days, but this issue out of Texas is a reminder that this challenge is not going to go away, nor will the issue and the question as we try to understand it. Back with final thoughts in just a moment. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Time and time again on this program, we have come back to the question of human dignity. And yesterday we had a major discussion on this issue that was occasioned by the cover story in the New Scientist Journal, that is a British scientific journal, having to do with how and whether human beings are to be understood as unique. You know, the main point of our conversation yesterday and of the article I posted today at my website at albertmueller.com is that secular science just can't answer the question of human dignity. It just can't answer the question, why are human beings unique? Yesterday, we looked closely at the article in the New Scientist, this cover story, that was trying to come up with what makes human beings distinct. And from a purely secular viewpoint, Well, they can't come up with much. As you'll recall, they came up eventually with five things they said do appear to be unique. Art, human beings alone are capable of representational art. Sport, animals play, but only human beings come up with rules and structures and umpires and all the rest. Cooking, yeah, all other animals are afraid of fire, but human beings overcame that fear in order to cook. You know, you start looking at things like that, and you realize that these are inadequate to sustain any kind of claim of human dignity. That's why in this world, we now have claims for animal rights. At the same time, we have the rights of human beings being curtailed. The only response to this is that the Christian worldview alone supplies an adequate foundation for human dignity, grounded in the fact that every single human being is made in the image of God, and the human dignity is thus to be understood and respected at every stage of human development and human life. Yesterday, we discussed this on the program. I posted the article. You can find it at my website today. I also posted a book review of Professor Robert F. George's book on the embryo. It was written by Professor George along with Christopher Tollefson at the University of South Carolina. It is a brilliant work having to do with the defense of the moral status of the human embryo. You know, just thinking about this, I was reflecting on the fact that we are among the very first generations actually to be able even to see the human embryo. And yet now we're also the generation that is moving towards the routine use of and destruction of the human embryo in medical experimentation. You know, it's really interesting, isn't it, that all this knowledge we have gained over the last several decades, all of this scientific information clearly has not made us more moral. It has not led to moral superiority or moral improvement. To the contrary, it has opened new opportunities for human beings to deny the obvious, new opportunities for human beings to subvert human dignity, new opportunities for promises to be held out, in this case, medical cures, that justify cutting all kinds of ethical corners. We've seen this before. I would suggest the book entitled Embryo, A Defense of Human Life by Robert F. George and Christopher Tollefson. It's not only about the embryo, it's about every single one of us and every single human being, because every single human being starts out as an embryo. I'll be back with you next week for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Thanks for listening to the Albert Mohler Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.